Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the UN, some team over
there. Easy for you to say.
UI Toolkit. Let's call it the UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
And today we have two guests.
I'm Ashish. I'm a TLM on Project Volta.
Hey, I'm Megan. I'm a product manager on Project Volta.
What's Project Volta?
Well, Project Volta is Google's initiative to try and improve battery life of Android devices, the ecosystem as a whole. So, came up with a cool name.
Sounds really useful. It's like electrical. I was thinking like Volga, like some myth reference or something.
No, we named it after Volta, the guy who invented the batteries in some form.
All right, no pressure. No pressure.
I thought that was John Duracell.
Yeah, that might be. I may be mistaken there.
Okay.
Off by a couple of hundred years, maybe.
Okay, so let me see. Project Volta first came along in Lollipop? When did we start working on that, or at least start talking about it?
We started working on it shortly before the Lollipop release, so as part of the Lollipop release when we first talked about it.
Okay.
Yeah, and there have been efforts to improve battery life in Android even before that. It's just that we came up with a cool name and decided to call it Project Volta then.
Okay, so it's just a marketing spin on crap we were doing anyway.
Well, was there something new that you started doing for Project Volta?
Yeah, a couple of things. For one, we decided to form a team that would solely look at battery life. And before that, it was a group of people, everyone trying to do their best.
Okay.
And we figured that it was an important enough problem for us to actually have a small set of people, give their full time to it. And after that, we've come up with a whole bunch of new things. I think Project Volta is...
That's when it really became a concerted effort in the company
to
go after battery life.
Yeah, I mean, I was being facetious. Sometimes I do that. But I do remember it being like a good thing for the platform in general because individual apps or engineers might think about how to conserve battery. Everybody might know that that's an issue, but it's kind of removed from that. But without a concerted effort to collect, the tools that we can run and the analysis that we do and sort of a general approach to writing apps or the platform, it's a little bit hard to solve the bigger problems. Speaking of which, okay, so where did it start then? In Lollipop, we were working on, was this tools and analysis stuff? Were we doing stuff in the platform? Like, what were we doing then, and where has it come? What's the spread of Project Volta?
Yeah, so it really started off, when we started the concerted effort, Project Volta, we started by looking at where the power is going on Android devices. And we sort of broke the world into screen on and screen off, right? So when the user has the device with the screen on versus when it's the screen off. And it turns out when the screen is on, the screen is consuming a majority of the power. But when the screen's off, it's the CPUs and the radios consuming a lot of the power, as well as other sensors and things on the device.
And so you're just saying that compared to the screen draw? Because obviously the CPU is on when the screen's on too. But you're saying that those numbers are small enough that it doesn't really matter?
Yeah, compared to the screen consuming the power, yeah.
Well, I think it's an order of magnitude higher.
Really?
So, yes.
How much does it help to turn down the brightness? Is that affected at all or not really?
Yeah, it goes a long way.
Yes, it does help.
Okay.
But we're talking about, most users would have their screen on for a few minutes, maybe half an hour, an hour for, most users like me. Mm-hmm. But for the majority of the time that we still carry our phones, they have their screen on and they have their screen off.
Right.
And so even that order of magnitude lower power consumption really adds up.
Because it's continuous as opposed to bursts. Okay.
Yes.
So what about the new ambient technologies that some devices have? Like, how does that compare? So the screen is on, but it's showing in this sort of ambient mode, certainly prevalent in the wear space, right? But also some phone devices have this where there's like a black and white mode. Right.
Yeah, so depending on what the screen technology is, sometimes they can light up only a few portions of the screen. And so in some ambient modes, it would not consume the same amount of power.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on whether the screen is OLED or if it's backlit, it really depends. But most, at least for the watches, they do have certain display modes that consume far less power than what a fully turned on screen would do.
Okay.
Are there, and this could be totally false. This is before I joined Google. I remember hearing something about the amount for the old monitors, the amount of energy used was tied to whether the pixels were light or dark, right? So someone made some calculation that if the Google home screen would switch to a black background instead of a white background, that would save you know, certain number of megawatts per year, whatever. The screen technology we're using in common phones, do they have any kind of attribute like that, or are all pixels equally costly?
I think we have a combination of both. So the OLED screens where you can light up the individual pixels, they might have a different power consumption depending on you know, what the color is or how many of them are on. But certain backlit technology screens that are also prevalent, you know, I think we see a fair bit of both.
So if you're, for example, reading on a tablet, are you better off then using the dark mode, you know, the black background with white text, or does it not matter?
It might make things easier to read.
Yeah, I like that. I like it because of that. So I'm trying to...
background, but in terms of power, it really depends on the screen technology in that particular device. So it may or may not matter.
Okay.
But avoid puce. Puce is super expensive in magenta. Okay, so you looked at these two different types of power, right? So you have screen on and screen off, and I assume you're trying to solve problems in both of them, right? Because they're both important.
They're both important. We've actually started with the screen off because that's where we saw a lot of applications performing activity in the background when the screen is off.
Yeah.
They're using either the CPU or the radio or both to keep the device awake, to sync to the network, what have you. And so that's where we saw an opportunity or at least a low-hanging fruit opportunity to improve things. And what we realized was that any application or anything in the system turning on the CPU or turning on the radio comes with an overhead, a fixed overhead that has to be paid every time. And so we realized that to the extent that we can coalesce that activity, we can save a lot of power that goes into the overhead.
So can you give some examples of what apps do to wake up the CPU?
So they might have a set of wake-up alarm to create a wake lock because they want to perform a sync with their backend at a particular time.
So like if I've written a mail client, every 5 minutes I want to check for new mail. So then I'm setting an alarm for 5 minutes. Every repeating 5 minutes, it's going to wake up and do a server.
That's right, yeah. And most mail clients today use cloud notifications. And so even with, let's say, when you receive a new email and the cloud backend sends a message to your device informing you that you have a new maybe an email or maybe an instant message that you receive, all of those would end up waking up your CPU. If you're on a busy Wi-Fi network, there's a whole bunch of broadcast traffic, multicast traffic, or maybe notifications from your printer advertising that it's there on the network. All of those operations would end up causing your CPU to wake up. And on the application side, where it's not incoming but outgoing, as you said, an application may have a use case where it's periodically trying to do something or every once in a while trying to, I don't know, sync your photos or try to download a new wallpaper in the background. All of those would incur a cost and would wake up the entire CPU.
So let me ask a really dumb question.
No.
No?
No.
Okay. All right. Chet won't let me. How... If I expect my phone to instantly pling when someone sends me an instant message, doesn't that mean that the phone has to be polling pretty often in order for that message to be fresh? I mean, if the whole phone was like not paying attention to the server for 5 minutes, that means that I would have to wait 2.5 minutes on average to notice that someone sent me a text, right? But usually it seems pretty fast. So what part of the system is it that is somehow discovering that something happened on the server?
Well, I think that's a good question. So if you're using a cloud backend, something like Google Cloud Messaging, for example, that's pushing out messages or instant messages, then what it does is it has a connection to the server that's constantly open. So it's a TCP connection with a timeout maybe in the order of 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And so you still have the abstraction of a TCP connection. And when you do receive a message, let's say in the case of Gmail, you receive a new email, Gmail backend will tell the Google Cloud Messaging backend that I have a new email that I want this notification delivered to the device, at which point that message would be sent over the TCP connection. And usually it's pretty much like your phone receiving a phone call. So
it's in some sort of low power mode, but it can sort of notice. So it doesn't have to spend those 20 minutes doing something on the CPU, it's basically being woken up by hardware that's saying, there's something happening here.
Exactly. So you receive a page from the cell network that would wake up your modem, which would in turn wake up your main CPU. Your CPU gets woken up by an interrupt that would be received by an incoming message.
So the power consumption of this low-level hardware that's doing that. That, I guess, is the best case scenario for how long a device can last, right?
You could say that, I guess. I mean, we've seen that before there were smartphones and we had, touch screens. Our old phones that were just good enough to make phone calls, they used to last a pretty long time. And now that we have...
The dark ages.
But yeah, that, the power consumption of the modem itself is pretty optimized in a number of cases. Having said that, though, once you receive a message and your modem has been activated, what would typically happen is you would incur a large overhead. So once your LTE radio or your 3G radio has been activated to now receive this message, it's usually operating... There are multiple states depending on what technology you are in. So if you are using 3G, there might be three different power states of the modem. LTE, there's usually two, I think. So there's one which is the base standby power, which is fairly small. Once you receive a message and now you're actively transmitting or receiving any data, then that's when it starts to, it transitions to a high power state. And it stays there for a bunch of seconds. So typically, we would see somewhere around 10 seconds, and this thing varies. But
and that's what, after you're done transmitting and receiving?
Yes. So let's say I send one packet, which is only 100 bytes or maybe 200 bytes, and your IM just contains one hello, and your modem gets woken up because of that message. After it has finished sending or receiving any packets, that modem would stay in the high power state for several seconds. And that power draw is pretty significant.
Is that just out of pure laziness on the device driver developer, or is there some good reason for this?
No, there are good reasons. Most infrastructure or cell providers, what they want to do is want to avoid a lot of signaling overhead. So each page that is responsible for waking up your modem to deliver a message causes a page, which is control overhead on their side. And so... for a cellular network not to get into a congested state, they want to avoid this churn of devices waking up their radio, getting paged, and then going back to sleep. And so from their end, what they're trying to do is optimize for the case where most likely if you received a message, it's not going to be one isolated packet, but maybe it's a new connection that's going to download or send a whole bunch of data. And so for that reason, what they try to do is give enough time for your radio to transmit and receive any extra bytes of packet. But depending on what the original use case was, this overhead usually piles up.
Okay, so to come back to Volta now, so what you're doing is that when it wakes up for whatever reason, that's when you decide to send all this other data as well. Is that correct?
That would be one approach. We are trying to tackle it from a slightly... higher layer.
Okay.
What we're trying to do is give application developers the right set of abstractions so they don't have to worry about the state of the radio going up or going down. But if we really think about the problem of syncing with a backend or doing some network activity, we want to try and club things together and coalesce them at a much higher level. So instead of, let's say, sending a few packets every few minutes or every few seconds, if you could hold on to that and batch things together, that would be a much more efficient use.
You give an example for what an application developer would do? Let's go back to the email example, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm writing an email client, and I sort of expect that occasionally there'll be some emails. What kinds of APIs, I don't mean spell out the API, but like what are the kinds of abstractions you're giving the email program author to integrate with this new API?
Well, so if you're an email client or an instant messaging application, we would definitely encourage you to use the Google Cloud messaging infrastructure because you go from this polling abstraction to much of an interrupt-driven abstraction where once you receive a message, the Google Cloud messaging backend can look at the messages being received by a wide variety of applications installed on your phone and then maybe do some micro optimizations. So it may decide in the interest of improving battery life on your device that instead of waking up your device for every new email receive, which most of us do very frequently, it may try to deliver it and batch it together with some app messages that you might be receiving for maybe Facebook or Twitter or what have you. And so really going from an polling model to an interrupt model would help in that kind of use case.
Do you? I've noticed that, you know, when my battery gets down to about 10%, it seems to go into that, you know, orange bar mode, right, where it's in low power mode. Is that? I guess that's also controlling what this will do, right? It'll go to fewer, longer delays between. No.
Yeah, that's a battery saver. That actually is a pretty big hammer. It actually shuts off network access when the screen is off for most of the applications.
For applications that are in the background. So that's a, you know, it's a big hammer.
That's why the bars are the color of blood.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good. I mean, it definitely underscores your point about how this is a big power draw, because I have noticed that when you get to 10%, then it lasts forever to get down those last 10%. So clearly, it's doing something pretty smart.
So going back to the original example where you said, okay, a message is received on the server side, and then because of this constant connection, it sends it down to the device. And then presumably, when there's a new message on the device, what does that cause an intent to be sent? And then, you know, Gmail would wake up, or the IM client or whatever. So the new model, or the batching model, would instead, in the cloud, it's actually going to wait on that message maybe for some amount of time to see if there are other messages for that application as well as other applications. So it's not even going to get down to the device until some timer went off and it can send down a batch of things? Or is it being batched on the client? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Okay, so I think you raise a good point. I couldn't finish the earlier line of thought. Any network activity can be either initiated by the server side, where it's, you know, someone's trying to reach your device, and the other is where your device is actually trying to, you know, get to the internet. And so those are two different things there. Depending on what your use case is, what your application is trying to address, so in the case of email clients, chat backends, there's no way that your device can anticipate that I'm going to receive a message. So
unless I'm pressing refresh, because I'm trying to get that message you just told me.
And that would be horrible. So for those applications where you have some cloud-initiated activity, we would encourage that you use Google Cloud Messaging that has already some of these mechanisms in place. And it tries to be smart by trying to give equal opportunity to all applications. So, probably the messages for your applications won't get delayed by too long just because there isn't another message that it wants to batch it together with. Now, having said that, now let's look at the other abstraction, which is, you turn on your screen, now you open up your browser, and you're trying to go to a news website. Now, that is activity that is initiated by your device. And so, in an active use case, that totally makes sense, that your mobile radio is activated when you turn on your screen and the user is interacting with the device. But some other applications, I'm going to just pick one. Say, for example, you take a picture and you have a photo backup application that tries to sync the photo back to your cloud. If it's trying to do that every time you click a picture, that may be a very inefficient use of the resources, right? So in that case, it would make sense that at a logical level, you define the upload of a photo as an abstraction, and then you try to think of, okay, maybe I'm going to upload a batch of photos together, and that might save me some resources.
I'm just thinking that photo upload is not the kind of mode where you have a short burst message. They're pretty large and they're pretty long. So it's hard to imagine that batching multiple photos would significantly save battery. I don't know.
Well, maybe you're right, but I think in that case, I'm going to qualify it by saying that it would help if the application waits for getting to the point where your device is actually charging, and maybe it's on Wi-Fi.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's definitely...
That's a completely different way of thinking about it, and because we know for sure that activity on your cellular radio tends to be more expensive in terms of power as compared to Wi-Fi.
Well, at least for me, with with my cellular coverage, it's going to take much longer and therefore draw more power over time.
Yes. And for me, if I'm going hiking, it's, you know, usually when I'm taking pictures, I'm out and about, maybe on a long day when I expect my phone to give me, you know, last me an entire day. And that's not the time when you would want all of that to be instantly happen. Maybe that's a valid use case, but we want to encourage application developers to start thinking about those things. Any activity that is not super critical or super time critical and can be delayed for a little while to get to the point where your device is on charger, at which point, from a battery perspective, it becomes free.
And okay, to make it easy for developers to do that, we launched the job scheduler APIs in Lollipop, where developers can specify a task, wrap it in a job, and say that, hey, do this when the device has Wi-Fi and is charging, for example.
Right. And then that approach also got adopted by GCM Network Manager.
That's right.
So then you can use it on pre-Lollipop devices as well. Yeah. A little bit different dynamics, but actually on Lollipop it uses Job Scheduler underneath. So it's.
But is there a support library, or I guess Play Services is where you access
Play Services.
This? Okay.
Play Services.
All right. So then it's available, and it'll use whatever the native facilities are on each platform.
Right.
Cool.
So I was going to try to understand that in the messaging case. So somebody sends you an email and is out in the cloud, and if you're using GCM, Google Cloud Messaging, then it will, you know, batch appropriately with other applications or whatever.
The one thing I should add to that is that there are obviously cases where you want that message to be delivered instantaneously to the device, like an instant message. And so for that, GCM Google Cloud Messaging supports what's called a high priority message, and that gets delivered immediately to the device.
All right. But then in the other direction that you were talking about, batching photos or whatever, then you could have those applications. They're not going to use GCM. This is not a message that we're sending, but instead they can use the network manager.
Yes.
Approach.
So in that case, they can use Job Scheduler or the GCM Network Manager, which is a backward compatibility library there.
All right. Cool.
Are radios by far the biggest power draw, or what about these other sensors?
Display. We covered this earlier in the episode.
Yeah, I was paying attention. I just forgot. So display. Are radios number two, or what about other sensors? Like I know we have a motion detector, right? That I think Project Volta is using for something, right? Or maybe it was
We do use significant motion detection to kick off Doze Mode. Most of those sensors are pretty well optimized, and they may operate even when the access when the APU or the CPU is not on. So they may independently operate and then interrupt the CPU when an interesting event happens. So it's not to say that they come for free, but they're usually pretty well optimized to have a low power consumption in the ideal scenarios.
Okay,
they're not doing a lot of processing. They're just they're getting the events and sort of sitting on them, right? There's not a lot of computation that has to happen on these. They're not doing the intelligence of what to.
Well,
sometimes it's more efficient to do the computation on the hardware. So we offload it to the hardware so that the CPU doesn't have to be woken up to do the computation. So you can say something. You can start with something like, oh, just record or keep track of what's happened, and then the CPU will wake up eventually to process that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're seeing a lot happening, then you can push that down further to the smaller chips to say, hey, keep track of when this gesture happened and let us know when the gesture happened versus giving us the raw data.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we had an earlier episode with Mark on location. And I think we talked a bit about this, right? About the chips that are doing activity detection.
Yeah.
I think the issue that I vaguely remember, I don't remember if he answered it, is, well, you know, if you put your phone in the dryer, so it's constantly moving, right? At some point, I would think that
don't do that. What are you?
I want credit for a really hard exercise. No, at some point, like it's going to run out of buffers, right? For just recording all the activity. So eventually, it either has to wake up the CPU just to say, okay, we've done a lot of work now. Let's log this. So you know, you're still better off just leaving your phone in your desk, I guess, than putting it in the dryer. But so leaving it on the desk, that's where you mentioned Doze Mode. Can you talk a bit about Doze Mode?
Yeah, so that's where Doze kicks in. After you leave your device stationary with the screen off for a while, we kick in Doze, starting with Marshmallow. Basically, what happens is applications can't hold wake locks anymore. They can't have network access. Any of their job scheduler jobs or sync manager syncs or their GCM network manager tasks get deferred until a maintenance window. And so once Doze kicks in, it actually kicks in for successively growing periods of time. And in between those periods is a maintenance window. And what we're really trying to do is allow applications a chance to refresh their content, sync, whatever it is they need to do, but then coalesce that activity to just that maintenance window, and then allow the device to stay asleep in a sort of a deeper sleep, this Doze state, where the CPU is not active, the networks are not active for longer periods of time.
So what's the shortest Doze duration, like, typically? I'm assuming it's configurable, but how long do I leave my phone on my desk before it stops
ping? It's on the order of tens of minutes.
Okay. All right. And then is it, what, double? for that?
Yeah, so what will happen is that if you have to leave the device stationary on the order of tens of minutes, as I said, for that long, and then the first period of doze will kick in. Right before it kicks in, actually, it does something pretty cool. It actually checks for an even sort of more sensitive motion detection to make sure that it's not a case like, hey, you have the device in your vehicle and you're driving kind of thing. That it's really stationary.
Really, really smooth train in some countries, yeah.
Right. And then it kicks in for that first order of tens of minutes, and then there's a maintenance window, and then it doubles effectively. Then there's another maintenance window, and this sort of continues until it reaches a maximum of a few hours. And so the maximum window that doze would stay at is a few hours at a time.
Why is that? Because didn't we have a use case of leaving a tablet, you know, in a drawer for a couple of weeks?
Yes.
And so, I'm thinking that, like, it doesn't need to wake up every 2 hours in the middle of the night in the third week,
It's longer than 2 hours for sure. But we found that at that point, we reached the balance that we wanted to strike between freshness of content and allowing applications to refresh and the battery benefits that we can squeeze out. So by the time that the device has been left stationary for it to reach this stage, it's been left stationary for quite some time. And if you keep leaving it stationary past that point, we find that this actually at this period of time we're able to provide sort of the optimal battery benefit.
Yeah, and it's sort of a trade-off. If you leave your device overnight, in the morning when you wake up, you don't want it to be horribly out of date. You still want to check your email. You want it to be.
In fact, I have a feature request for you. What I would like Doze to do, it's basically the opposite of Doze, but I want it to install updates to applications, because what I hate is that it seems to do that when I start using the device. And when applications are being installed, your phone is basically unusable, right? You know, when it's busy, I don't know what it's doing, but I think it's holding locks or whatever, so nothing is really fast. And I really hate that happens while I use the phone. And I'd be willing to have it like every night to say, oh, do we have updates? Okay, let me get those out of the way.
Actually, it seems like that would be, the system should be job scheduling something for, like, I am plugged in and I'm, you know, screen is off. Like, they could do that at the app or the system.
They could do the plugged in thing, but the thing is, at least in my experience, it does install apps when I'm not plugged in. But it's doing it when I'm using it, which is when I don't want it to do it. Yep. So, anyway, that was...
That may be a bug, because I think we worked with the Play Store teams for applications that you have auto-updates on for. They would try and wait for your device to be on charger... to the extent possible, they don't want to delay it by days at a time. But I think they try to be smart about that. We should look into that.
Well, certainly. I mean, I'm a big dog fooder, right? So I probably take more updates than most people. But still, it bugs me.
Yeah.
What was I going to ask about? No, it's gone now. I did want to ask about tooling, though. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the approaches that app developers could take and some of the stuff that we've done on the system with Doze. We haven't talked about App Standby yet, but I know that a lot of the work going on in Project Volta was actually developing the tools that we were using to analyze what these problems were, right, where you saw some of these systemic issues that we could address. So can you talk about some of the stuff that we use or we wrote or that app developers could use?
Yeah, so
it may be divided in that too, like the tools for internal, like figuring out what's going on with our drivers and OS and what are application developer tools.
Yeah, so I think we have worked on one tool that we found to be very useful because it sort of gives you a complete picture of what's going on in the system, and you can use that to figure out where the most of your resources were being spent. And we internally have a different name for it, but externally we've released it on GitHub as open source. It's called Battery Historian. And so if you go on GitHub, it's by Google, and search for Battery Historian. It's something that we have constantly evolved over the last year. We introduced it at last year I/O, and then we've constantly sort of worked on it throughout. What it would do is it has two time views because the device maintains two types of stats. One is a running event log or a time series of sorts of events that we think are important with respect to battery. So say, for example, your CPU turning on, your GPS turning on, your screen turning on, turning off. And so the log that we have all of this in is called battery history, which is a time series of events of all the state transitions of the important sensors, operations like syncs, your CPU waking up, network activity. So what Battery Historian does is it visualizes all of that in a fairly intuitive way.
So it's an app for your Android device? So you install Battery Historian on your phone and then...
No, it is not. It is a web tool where it's written in Go. You can install it locally on your device, and it runs a local web server in Go and uses JavaScript to really create this interactive UI that would help you go and dig deep.
Okay.
So this is not something that you would run on your device. It's more of you have a use case you maybe are trying to analyze battery.
Okay, so I assume then that there's some sort of data collection happening, right? How do you collect data for a Battery Historian?
Bug report.
You take a bug report.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's historical data that has been tracked the entire time, and at any point you can take a snapshot with a bug report.
Okay,
and
so it's
that.
So it's somewhat high level information then.
No, it's actually fairly granular about every battery related thing that's happening at millisecond granularity. That's the battery history, and so it would be things like the CPU going awake and who caused it to wake up, or the radio's states, or you can look at the jobs, or if the device was in doze. So it tracks all these things that are happening, and it this is the section that Ashish said was battery history, and that's part of the bug report starting with Lollipop.
Yeah, and it's a fixed size buffer that gets reset every time you completely charge your device. So it's and sometimes it'll go over if you have if you've been going days without your buffer overrunning. So at any point of time, if you take a bug report, it would have the stats since the last time the device was fully charged. So maybe if I unplugged my device in the morning today, it would tell me since.
So you definitely, if you know something really is wrong, you better grab that bug report before you plug it in.
That would be a wise decision, yeah. Yes.
Okay. So is this related to the information that you can see on device, which is the battery view in settings? As you go into settings, you click on, I think it's battery, right? And then it shows you a graph of like some of the high-level events in the system.
Yes, that I think is contains your history over a slightly longer period of time and doesn't have the same granularity of data because it's too much information to show on a device, and maybe we don't want the users looking at or worrying about every CPU state transition. So this is
and often there's like the catch-all system or something like that, right? That is hard to know what to do about that. Does Battery Historian give you a better sense of what caused the system to do so much work?
It doesn't give you any extra information than what's already, well, in terms of blaming of the apps, it will give you more or less the same sort of information. It will try and, from a developer perspective, try and give you a lot more insight on what maybe caused certain periods of time to have a high discharge. So Battery Historian would have two types of log, the battery history that I mentioned, which is a time series of logs. And the other type of log that's also maintained on a running basis is accumulated over periods of time. So it'll tell you how many times did your CPU turn on in the last X hours, maybe 4 hours since you last unplugged your device. So it'll tell you how much Wi-Fi activity happened during that time, how much mobile traffic happened during that time, and information about a whole bunch of sensors. So it will not really place you or tell you about all of these different state transitions, which are expensive to collect, but it will give you an aggregate view of a much larger set of variables. The battery history has a handful of important metrics, and you can get a fine-grained timeline of a subset of those metrics.
Okay, so if you're an application developer, your call to action here is to do a bug report, run your app for some hours, and then do a bug report, and then open up this website, point to the right data.
Well,
you have to install it locally, I understand.
Yes, you can install it.
So okay,
you can
and then you explore it. And what are the kind of things that people typically find?
Graphs.
JavaScript errors. No.
Some of the things that we found very useful is you can look at how much time the device is spending in suspend. So if an application is holding a wake lock, and maybe because of a race condition, it was not able to release that wake lock, then your CPU would be constantly prevented from going into suspend, and your discharge rate would be higher.
So and it would be obvious from the graphs that
yes.
that is what happened, that it was your app that held it. It sort of...
Depending on the mode, there's a lot more detail on how to use the tool on the GitHub website where we tell you about that because it's always a trade-off between how much information you collect And, you know, at what point does the overhead of collecting that information take over?
Yeah, that's why I was surprised to hear that this is not using special collection, because I would think that on the one hand, here you really want to see fine-grained events, but I wouldn't think that you'd want to wake up the CPU to log something unless you really asked for that, unless you really want to go in a mode where, look, we're going to profile the whole system. We want to know the power draw of every possible thing that's happening. And we know it's going to cost more, but, you know, we're going to calibrate it to subtract our overhead or whatever.
Yes, so you're right. We do not collect events in the battery log or battery history do not show up. We never wake up the CPU to collect an event. Right. It's almost always that your CPU is running or somebody woke up the CPU for some reason. At that point, we would put a marker in there. And for that same very reason, it's maybe 10 or 20 different metrics that are collected on a fine-grained basis. Not everything on your system is calibrated that way. Yeah. But if you wanted to get information about each and every wake lock that your application has acquired, for that you would need to enable a special flag and then take a bug report for that, at which point it'll start collecting all the information about every app's holding of the wake locks.
I see. So I know we have something called strict mode, right? Where you can go into strict mode and it'll like put a red border around your app when it does something bad, mm-hmm. for example. Does that do anything with power, or am I talking about something totally
unrelated now? No, that tends to be like you're doing silly things on the UI thread.
Okay.
Right. Or you can also opt into it for things that you want to flag in your own application. There is a way that you can instrument your application to use it.
Okay.
No. Okay. I don't think that relates.
No. So this is, by default, what battery history would contain is it would tell you that some wake lock was acquired by an application. It will not by default tell you which application acquired that wake lock at that particular instant, unless you enable this detailed logging, at which point we would collect information about all of the different wake locks by each application. And that's usually not so much an overhead in terms of battery, but your buffer would run out quickly because applications acquire and release wake locks far more often.
So this is really for application developers. So if you're working in a company that has an Android app and you're being told, hey, you know, users are complaining that our app is draining their battery, that's when you would go and do this. You would probably opt into this and you run just your app and then try to trigger whatever the problem is.
Sure. Yeah.
In other words, no.
Yeah. Well, for your really rudimentary understanding of this entire situation, Tor, sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, it really seems like two different goals, right? I mean, if you work in the, either, in the Android team or for, a handset manufacturer, you need to like look at the whole system and you don't actually care which app is to blame. You just need to find every single problem and get rid of it, right? Whereas if you're an app developer, you really don't care about the rest of the apps. And care more about your own app's freshness, actually.
So Battery Historian does have an application-specific view, and the tool is intended not just for system developers like us, but also for application developers. And so what you can do is, even though you have all of this information, you have a filter in there where you can put in your application and look at the stats for just your application.
Okay, good.
So it'll tell you how much data your application transferred over Wi-Fi, over GPS, over LTE radio, how many wake-up alarms you had, how many syncs or job scheduler jobs you had, your use of various sensors, a whole lot of information. So it is a tool. What I meant was it's not something that we would expect users who are not developers to actually go and install this tool.
Just developers.
Yes.
I get that. Yeah.
Okay.
Are there any other... So we've talked about, doing your own networking as opposed to using the job scheduler API. We talked about not releasing wake locks. Are there any other common battery or power-related bugs that you've seen in apps that you sort of think app developers should be aware of?
Or more generally, what are good strategies for app developers to be more battery friendly?
Yeah, so I think I wanted to touch back on this based on some discussion that we were having earlier on the cloud-initiated activity and the device-initiated activity, and we looked at the example of an email client getting a notification about an email. Even in that case, it's usually best to use a combination of GCM and job scheduler. So if your application, once it has received a message from the cloud saying that you have a new application, instead of firing up a sync right then, it is much better that you use job scheduler, because then at that point, the system can coalesce and maybe there was some other application that had a loose requirement. So in job scheduler, you can specify that I want this network activity to happen anytime within the next hour. And so while we are firing up your sync and the network radio is being activated, we can then use that opportunity or that window of time to also help other applications that maybe did not have as strict of time requirements.
Are most of the Android apps from Google, are they using the Job Scheduler API now? And have you done some measurements on how often this happens, that you actually have multiple jobs that are just sitting around going, I don't care when it happens as long as it happens?
Yes.
Is the number of jobs greater than one when you do these syncs?
It is. It should be. We've spent a lot of time trying to, and Megan can speak more on that.
So in general, I think the point here is that anytime you have to do anything in the background, any kind of background task, you should try to use Job Scheduler to do it, because that's the best way Android can coalesce this activity in the background, and then you don't have to really think about that as much. But to your question, we see that. In fact, you can see it if you use Battery Historian. You can actually see the jobs getting coalesced.
Oh, nice.
The way Job Scheduler works, it provides various sort of trigger semantics, right? You can trigger it on specific networks being available, or you can actually say that do this within the next hour, for example, right? And so in that case, it may not always be able to coalesce, so it will do its best effort to coalesce, but also respect sort of the freshness desires of the application developer.
Okay.
Yeah, so what we want, at a high level, application developers to think about is, think about what sort of activities or background tasks are really usable, user visible, and what are the other things that may be important but less time critical. And in those cases, use things like Job Scheduler when you have to, and make use of the various features that we have in there, where you can try to prefer Wi-Fi over cellular networks, or try to do as much activity when the device is on charger for less time-critical tasks.
Is there also a concept of things being more active when the screen is on? So if I turn the screen on, then we're running sort of in higher mode or doing things more freshly than when it's sort of in my pocket.
Well, for one thing, when the screen is on, the CPU is constantly awake.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, already, I mean, it's...
So then we wouldn't need to wait an hour for this. We could just basically do everything.
Well,
I guess the radio's not on.
No, so there, yeah, you may not have the right network, right? So you may not be on Wi-Fi, as you were just saying. You may not be on chargers if you have set that selection. And Job Scheduler is also trying to optimize for low RAM situations as well. So if the user is trying to do something that's using a lot of RAM, then Job Scheduler will actually throttle down its concurrent execution to ensure that what the user is actually trying to do works well.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess you don't want background tasks such as installing apps interfering with what the user is doing.
Back to Tor's point.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. And are there other tools? Are there any command line tools for extracting more information, or on-device tools that you think are useful? Or is it really about Battery Historian sort of collecting all the data together?
Well, so Battery Historian is a good visualization of the data that's already present in the bug report. You can run ADB, shell, dumpsys, battery stats to get just the section about battery. But that's already contained in the bug report, so maybe you don't really need to do that. I can't think of anything.
That's pretty much it. And it's on GitHub, so it's being developed in the open. And so this is like refreshed on an ongoing basis?
Yes, we try to do a push. We have another one pending that we are going to add a set of new features, maybe in the next month or so.
Okay.
As soon as we can get to it. Okay. It's, we try to update it every once in a while.
Cool. I remember what I was going to say earlier. So back to Doze mode. I was curious. It seems like the heuristic of when is this phone stationary is really interesting to play with, right? Because, if it's sitting on a desk not moving at all, it's easy to figure that out over a period of time, and clearly the user is not doing anything with it. That's a great time. But it seems like also there's a period of time where it's sitting in my pocket and I'm driving in the car for 4 hours. It would be lovely to retain the battery, but then how do you – I mean, have you experimented with, like, different types of Doze mode where, it's not actually stationary, but we can tell that they're not interacting with it?
Yeah, so there's a feature that sort of addresses that kind of a use case called App Standby that we launched in Marshmallow. And the idea there is really for applications that you as a user haven't used for a period of time. And if you haven't, then those applications lose network access while the device is on battery. And so that the idea there is that to reduce sort of the battery impact of applications users haven't been using for a while.
Okay.
We're continuing to look at additional ways we can do doze even when the device is not stationary, because certainly we want to improve the battery life there as well.
Yeah.
But nothing concrete yet.
Okay. Interesting. App standby. So that also came out in Lollipop, right?
What's that? It came out in Marshmallow.
That was Marshmallow. Okay.
I sometimes get credit for bicycling when I'm sitting on the Google bus home from work.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that, you know, it might think you're exercising and actually working to give you credit as opposed to going, oh, this is doze.
Right. You have achieved your goal of sitting on a bus for an hour.
Yeah.
Well
in
done.
Traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, okay. and Marshmallow was really the first time that we experimented with something like App Standby or doze, something that I don't think we've done in the past. And we found that to be pretty useful. And I think going forward, we would want to improve on that and make it even more widely applicable.
And were there problems that you know of when that first came out? It seems like that was a change for the mental model of how application developers knew their applications were behaving, right? Because now all of a sudden the platform is saying, no, actually, you're not awake for a little while here, right? As opposed to just, I'm going to, you know, wake up that thing in the background and run my service whenever I want to make sure that the user wants a new book on this thing they haven't run forever, right? Does this cause a shift for developers where now they need to take that into account that they may not be able to sync as often as they thought they could?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. They can't. For example, with doze now, you can't rely on turning the CPU on and holding a wake lock anytime you want. Right, as you could previously in Android. What we've done there is you know I mentioned earlier introduced the high parity GCM bit, so that allows for certain use cases like instant messaging, for example, which wouldn't otherwise work because this device is running with the CPU off, for the CPU to be woken up and that application being granted network access temporarily so it can get the message and show it to the user, because there's this expectation that instant messages continue to work instantly.
Right? Okay. Yeah, so otherwise we'd have to change the name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's easier, because then we could retain the battery, but we just change the name of
occasional messaging.
Yeah. Intermittent. Intermittent, we can keep the same acronym.
Yeah.
All right. All right. You were going to say something. No. Okay. It's gone.
Any parting thoughts?
Partying thoughts. Okay. Say something really wise. Something you've always wanted to say about battery.
Well. Seems like I'm going to let you go. Oh, my God.
Well, I would leave you with, you know, thinking about sort of the high-level concepts we talked about, right? So as you think about the stuff that your application needs to do in the background, think about how you can reduce it, you know, get away with not doing it in the background. And if you can't do that, try to defer it to when the device is on charger, sort of the best thing you can do. And if you absolutely can't do that, then coalesce it, or you know, help Android coalesce it. So use Job Scheduler, use GCM Network Manager, so that Android can coalesce that activity.
And I just remembered, isn't there some other way to do what wake locks used to do? I swear that people used to grab a wake lock in one part of the lifecycle and release it in another. But isn't there some flag you can set now instead that basically tells the screen to stay on while your activity is... Oh, okay. So, no, okay, I'm just getting blank looks, so this might be totally wrong.
Are you talking about the broadcast receiver and then you...
No, this is not for networking. There is something that people used to use wake locks, like if you have a video player. You don't want, after 5 seconds of watching the video, for the screen to go off because, you know, the user's not interacting. So you basically would grab a wake lock saying, I am control now, I'm playing, and I will release this when the user says pause, right? But I think there is another way, a better way now, to set some sort of intent flag or something. Or maybe it's not intent flag, that's the wrong term. But, you know, there's some kind of other way to do this, I think, that is better, and you're not going to be leaking wake locks. But that was super vague. I thought you guys would be like, oh, yeah, of course.
I like it. It's a mystery. Like, we're leaving the podcast on a cliffhanger. Like, what is this new capability that Tor talked about?
It's not even new. This is, like, multiple years old. But it's just one of those other things that I've seen. The reason I know this is I was working on Lint, and I added a wake lock detector. I think it was around the same time that Volta started up, actually. So I was looking into, well, how do people use wake locks? And that's when I discovered that, well, actually, there aren't a lot of great examples anymore because you shouldn't be doing it that way.
Interesting. So... I think my last thoughts would be, you know, as application developers, we often have this tussle in our head where we are trying to deliver the content, you know, in almost immediately and have the content be fresh, all the time. And that's a bad trap to fall into, because what ends up happening is, even though your user may be getting the content right the very moment you push it out, he or she may not need it at the time. And what ends up happening is, if these things tend to pile up, if there's one thing that we've learned from, you know, our 2 years maybe of working on Project Volta, it's usually death by a thousand cuts. It's a lot of small things done by a wide variety of applications that tend to add up. And the end result is that the user is not able to use the device for as long as we want, which becomes an annoyance, because we have really useful devices. But because of certain, let's say, less thought of design choices that application developers tend to make, because they don't have the entire view of the entire system, these things tend to add up. So we've tried to, you know, create APIs and think about very simple abstractions, not too much, that every one of us can make in our applications in maybe a couple of hours. Change all of these APIs are pretty simple to implement, and these things will go a long way when the Android ecosystem as a whole, applications tend to move towards that, and then we can have much longer battery lives on our phones.
That we have a concept that we've talked about on the platform team, that's every device is a village. Right. And it's that exact concept. It's that your specific application syncing too often isn't that big a deal to the overall battery. You're just killing it a little bit. But every application doing the exact same thing is exactly what's contributing to the big problems.
Yeah.
Right. It's the overall ecosystem that the user is experiencing, not your specific application. So every application developer needs to be aware of and do the right thing to make the overall experience better.
Yep.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.